Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is your good friend, the very esteemed and well-travelled Clarence Copernicus Cloverleaf, welcoming you to another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon. You can always feel free to call in at 602-753-1883 to ask a question to the host or any of his well-established guests. Just please remember when calling in to be on your best behavior. This is a G-rated show, you know. Hey, that was a wicked rhyme. Anywho, just be sure to be kind and courteous. Now, on to the main event. Hello to all our dear listeners. This is your spokesman with a plan, Clarence Cloverleaf, coming to you after somewhat of an absent spell, as since December of 2018, I've been sailing around the world. From Italy to Canada, I've been making my way across this beautiful land of ours, searching for new meaning to an older existence. I'm happy to say I'm back now, and here to let you in on some stuff going on as of late. In mid-2018, the Cloverleaf Radio Network expanded to include our friends Josh and Ariana over at Night Moves Radio. It's been a splendid partnership, and Jimmy, Jane, and I are happy to welcome them to the family. They also brought along Soul Stories, which features inspiring poetry, read by the author herself, Ariana Cherry. We've been brought onto many new networks, including Anchor, the ASY podcasting network, WordPress, Podbean, even iHeartRadio. We've also started a fresh...
Hey, this is actress Brianna Denski. You may know me best as playing June in the film Wonder Park. And you're listening to Cloverleaf Radio, hosted by the host with the most, Jimmy Falcon.
All righty, we are back for another exciting edition of Cloverleaf Radio. I'm the host of the most, Jimmy Falcon, and joining us today is actor, writer, director, producer, author, Peter Elbling. He's done it all, probably more than I was able to list there, but how's it going, Peter?
Oh, it's going very well, and I'm delighted with that ad. It reminded me of all sorts of things I'd completely forgotten.
I love hearing that because they take some time to get all the logos together and stuff, and I'm sure if I was more famous, Warner Brothers or one of the big companies might get mad at me, but I'm glad that people are able to get enjoyment out of seeing all their work in one place. I'm sure it can be a mind trip sometimes.
Well, yes, but a delightful one. So, again, thank you, and I appreciate the work that went into it, too. Seeing my picture there surrounded with all these TV shows is very flattering, and it's always good to be flattered, you know?
Absolutely, and I guess I wanted to start in the beginning. I have a lot of love for England and Scotland, although I've never been there. The Boothby family comes from there, and you growing up there, it seemed like your childhood was kind of typical for the upbringing. You had the estate. You had a manservant private school.
That's right. That's absolutely correct. I was one of the last. They don't do that very much anymore. But I was one of the last people to have a manservant, you know. It was quite wonderful, actually.
Well, how did you or why did you, I guess, decide to give up what people may call these days a cushy lifestyle to go to Canada and be a traveling folk singer?
Yeah, that was a bit of a switch, I must admit. I think I was around 19 at the time, and I secretly wanted to come to the United States. But when I went to the American Embassy in England, it's this huge brick building, obviously, but it was so foreboding that I was intimidated. And it was much easier to get into Canada, being a British subject. So I chose to go to Canada first, and that was, a walk in the park getting in. And then after a couple of years of going across Canada, which is where I started folk singing, I went down into the States. So prior to going to Canada, I had been learning to how to play guitar, but I'd never performed in public. But that was Canada takes responsibility for that. And in particular, a place called Calgary, Alberta, which is where I first performed.
Wow, yes, Canada is very fast. It seems like I know that closest I got was Detroit. I know that's pretty close to Toronto. But
yeah,
whereabouts is Calgary?
Calgary is sort of the Midwest of Canada.
Oh, so it's our area, basically.
Right.
I'm in Illinois, so it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, sort of. It may be a little further west than Illinois, but it's sort of in that area, you know?
Wow. But I've heard that Canada's, in a lot of ways, is like America, so I guess, if you could make any comparisons between two countries.
Yes, it's sort of America light, you know? It has all everything that you have in America, you have in Canada, plus a few other oddities that are purely Canadian, none of which I can remember anymore, because it's been 50 years at least, you know.
Yeah, that's understandable. I noticed that it didn't take long before you your nervous energy this made you decide to stop folk singing, and you joined a comedy group. And I hope I'm not butchering this guy's name with Michael Choquette.
Well, yeah, he's actually French Canadian, so he pronounces it Michel Choquette.
Well, see, yep, messed it up.
No, that's all right. Not at all. I did all the time just to annoy him.
The Times Square too. How did you guys get end up meeting and get together?
Excuse me. We were both playing at a club. Actually, we were both playing in Calgary, and then we both played together in Edmonton. And as was the case in those days, it seemed that everybody had a guitar. And it was only natural that after the gig, we'd sit down and say, oh, do you know this song? Do you know that song? And we both happened to know a song from the 1920s called I Wish I Could Shimmy Like My Sister Kate, which is a great song, actually. And we both knew it. And he said that he had first learned it from an old 78 record in which the singer had introduced himself by saying, this is Mr. Brown singing, I wish I could shimmy like my sister Kate. And then off he sang, you know. And we both thought that was so hilarious that we decided to sit next to one another and play the song together as an encore when we both finished our sets.
Wow.
And we decided to comb our hair in the middle, make the part in the middle, and we both had similar suits, blue suits, so we quickly changed into those, and we rushed out to do our song for the audience, and they'd all gone home. So that was the very first.
Oh, no.
But we didn't despair. We actually both moved to Vancouver from there. And we were so delighted with the ideas that we'd come up with that that's where we started performing the Times Square 2. And everybody said, oh, you guys are great. You should go to America. So we did 6 months later.
Wow. And the next 5 years, you guys kind of did the coffee houses, nightclubs, concert halls with some wonderful TV shows, Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour, Dean Martin Show, Johnny Carson. Lots of great names. That had to be really interesting and kind of made you think, wow, this is probably what I should have been doing for this whole time.
It was. It was a little bewildering, too. We did a show. What was that? Yeah, the Dean Martin Show, and then they had a summer show, the name of which escapes me at the moment. You know, the big stars always sort of take off, and then they have a summer show that goes for
a variety
eight
show.
Weeks or something, you know, a variety show, exactly. Excuse me, and we were on that for 8 weeks, and we met all sorts of people, some of whom I just didn't know, I wasn't aware of, because I was so young, and I did a sketch with someone like Sid Caesar, and we met Groucho Marx. I mean, it was quite an amazing time. I wish I had known then what I know now, because I would have appreciated it so much more.
I'm still pretty young. I'm 30, but I was just watching old episodes of You Bet Your Life the other day, and Groucho was so on with his timing, and that Say the Secret Way, Divide $100, that voice was just so memorable.
Oh, he was wonderful, and he was just like that in person. If you left a space in between sentences, he'd fill it with a wisecrack. I mean, he was just amazing, and at that time, he was getting on in years, but his mind was as sharp as ever.
That is amazing, and I've heard a lot of great things about Dean Martin when I talked to his daughter Dina, and it just seemed like he was one of a kind, one of those people you see and you can go, this guy looks like a great guy, and he ends up being one. That's always great to hear.
Yeah, you never really get to meet those people unless you have a special connection. You become friends outside of the show. But the few exchanges I had with him were really good. He was very pleasant and very encouraging, you know. You guys are great. See you around. That sort of thing, you know.
Wow. Well, I did notice, and I wanted to bring this up because, unfortunately, we lost Valerie Harper just about not even 3 weeks ago.
Right.
You were on Rhoda for a...
Yes, I was, yes.
What was that like, that working on that show and getting to work with her?
Oh, she was wonderful. She was wonderful. Again, nearly everybody who makes it to that level, one of the things, not always, but most of the time, they're very kind and very generous because they've gone through a lot to get there and they realize how difficult it is for everybody else. And they're always willing to share their time or expertise or anything that they can help you with. And she was certainly one of those people. I had great fun on that show.
And going into my childhood and... Rick Moranis was always hilarious, and I found it really cool that you wrote what became Honey, I Blew Up the Kid.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you guys get the idea for that?
I can't remember how we heard it. At the time, I was producing and directing a group of improvisational actors. We would perform once every 6 weeks or so, called the Hollywood Primary. We'd do it at midnight at a famous hotel here in town called the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel. And I was friends, obviously, with all the people in the cast. And I remember somebody telling a story about a giant baby. And I remember getting hold of my friend Gary Goodrow and saying, this is a great story, we should write it. So we wrote a film script called Big Baby, and it just so happened that I think it was around the time that we wrote it that Honey, I Shrunk the Kids came out.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were looking for a sequel, we had it right there, you know, and then they brought in other writers to make sure that it was a good sequel in the sense that it had the same characters and so forth and so on. But that's where the idea started.
Yeah, and for them to get Randall Kleiser to direct it, he has so much talent as a director, with Grease being maybe his most legendary film. But he was very nice to talk to, and I'm sure that seeing any kind of idea you have, and you guys work so hard to put together a script for, to see that get made and not just shoved in a desk or on the floor somewhere, has got to be a really awesome feeling.
Well, it was obviously delightful when they decided to give us credit, because with any number of films made in Hollywood, there's often several writers. They go through several rewrites, and as they did with Big Baby. And then later on there's a commission or a panel who go through all the various scripts and decides who has given enough to the project to warrant getting credit, and they decided that we had. So that was wonderful when that phone call came through. That was really terrific. I remember that very distinctly. It was quite a bit different than the original script we wrote. Ours was a little more hard-edged. But at the time, the first one hadn't come out, so we weren't trying to... be a sequel. We were just trying to be a standalone. And ours was just called Big Baby, Anyway.
We had an idea. And that's anything that becomes legendary or even iconic starts on such a small ground level that a lot of people are probably amazed where some of these movies get created and where they get wrote. Because it's not always the bright lights of Hollywood and in front of hundreds of people. It may just be a small group and a small office anywhere around the nation or the world now.
Well, now in particular, I mean, now because of all the social media and just the way the world has evolved, you can be in Alaska and write a great screenplay and get it to somebody in Hollywood, you know, that afternoon. It's no big deal. It used to be a completely different ballgame. But now, which is good, it makes it much more eclectic, and anybody and everybody can be involved. That's not to say it's any easier, because now there are 10 times as many people trying to get into business. But anyway, that's a whole business talk. I don't want to get into that.
Yeah, the Hollywood that we watch in films and television, and then going there and going through the motions, as many people have, it's not the same thing, and it can be a very terrifying town, and one that will really break down a human spirit if you're not willing to be out there for a long haul and to go through so many auditions and being on a commercial and all these things before you finally get to where you're making a decent pay, because it costs so much to even live out there.
My God, you sound as if you've been through the mill out here. Have you?
No, I have. I did visit for a week and met up.
That was
with,
enough.
People, yeah. Well, living in a small farming town of less than about 500 people, and going from that in one day to like 3.75 million somewhere around there can be one thing. But I guess hearing horror stories over the years doing this is maybe where my deep, rich Hollywood feelings these days come from.
Okay. Oh, good, good. Because there's some wonderful movies out right now or coming out soon. I think the movies are as good as ever, you know. So the talent is always there. It's just a question of it being heard and seen, you know.
Yes, I think there's probably a lot more, like you mentioned, more opportunities these days than where there was when you got your start.
I would agree. I would agree.
But going into some of your own work, you have your own character, Mr. Vin Egar. I hope I got that right with the apostrophe over there.
Mr. Vin Egar. Yes.
Third time is the strike.
No, it's fine.
But you created your own character and have continued to make short films and even a feature in sometime in 2011, it says in your bio. But when did you decide to create your own character and go through, you know, doing all these things yourself, even though you've had so much experience, it has to be harder to, say, put something else on your plate?
Well, actually, and I think this is true, you'll find if you speak to a lot of people in Hollywood, that you're in the system because you want to be in the system because it pays money, you know, to live. But I think you'll find that many, many actors and certainly many writers are always doing something on the side in the hope that they can get it made, and also because it satisfies a creative urge that they're not satisfying or is not being satisfied in the usual work that they do. And excuse me again, I came up with Mr. Vin Egar. I don't remember exactly how, but I like the idea of an obnoxious, I was going to say something, I don't know what I can say on your radio, a guy who doesn't like the world. I just thought there was a lot of humor in that. And I proceeded to make several short films and wrote a feature, which as of this moment I haven't been able to get off the ground. But he's been a great deal of comfort to me. And I've been able to involve some really good acting friends of mine in those small projects. I don't know if you know any of the people. Brian Dore Murray, I believe, was in one. Bill Murray's brother. Oh, he was in something else. Chris Mulkey, I mean, all sorts of people have, Larry Hankin, other people who's you may know or may not know, but you would certainly recognize the faces.
Well, yeah, I know Larry, and I know of Brian Doyle Murray because I've seen a lot of his work. He is hilarious.
He's wonderful.
Yeah, I remember, like, going back to Vacation, he had a cameo in that. Going up to, I watched Yes, Dear. He had a recurring role as the boss on that show. So Yeah, he's definitely great talent. Larry Hankin is a very talented man and a very nice guy as well.
Oh, you've done a show with him?
A few.
Oh, great.
Yeah,
wonderful.
A few. Thankfully, he doesn't have... See, that's what it's kind of crazy about going through the motions with this. Yeah, I think you have a pretty... it's a great name, but it's pretty simple to say now that I think about it. But some of the people I've had on the past couple of weeks... like Cat Roll Show was one lady, and I had Athena Prohodko, and that was a really interesting spelling. But it seems like the harder it is to spell, the easier I can kind of get it. But the easier it is to spell, the more the chance there is to flub it up.
That's funny. That's very funny, but not unusual.
Well, the last question I always like to ask the guest is what the future holds for you. I'm sure you're still going at this. You have had such an accomplished career that you couldn't just let it go anytime soon. So what do you got coming up that you can discuss or would like to? And where can people find you if they want to find out more about your work or follow you on Facebook or anything like that?
Well, actually, I'm just finishing up another novel. I have written a novel called I've written a novel called The Food Taster, which came out about 15 years ago, something like that, and which I'm very proud of. And it was published in over 20 countries around the globe. And again, every couple of years, somebody threatens to make a movie out of it, but as yet they haven't. And so this new one has nothing to do with that. It's a contemporary novel, and it's called Acts, A-C-T-S, of Amusement. And as soon as I finish writing it, which I hope will be within the next month, I will do my best to get a publisher and get it out to everybody, including you and all the people listening.
That is very awesome. I think any time someone can have success with writing a book or a film and then go through the motions of life and time and decide that you had so much fun and it was a success to go back and create something more with those characters and thoughts.
Yes, indeed. But in this particular case, this has nothing to do with the other novel. Did I confuse you, or am I confused?
No, I confused myself. I got said that. I'm sorry. I was trying to write a thing that we were still on the air on Twitter, and it made me lose my train of thought. That's why people can't multitask, and no matter how much we think we can, I think it's a myth.
I agree completely. Because I find it hard enough just to concentrate on one thing.
Absolutely. Well, I think that if you do decide to make something else, even out of the characters from this book down the line, it can be very... nice as well to see sequels. I know people always go, where's the sequel?
Yes, but
after a certain time, I think it's nice to pop back in because it kind of surprises people.
Well, I'm hoping the sequel will be the movie. Let's put that out there. You know, that would be great if it was a movie. I'd be delighted, you know. But thank you for all the plugs. I appreciate it.
Yes, it's no problem. Thank you for joining us today. And yes, sorry about the flub-ups. I think that's the most per episode on names and everything along those lines. So thanks for joining us and being compassionate towards my mess-ups.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
All right, Peter. Have a great night. Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All righty, guys. Well, we are going to be back, looks like, September 16th. We are very happy to be welcoming actor Greg Moffitt. He had a career as a child actor mostly. I know he just most recently, I think it's this year, he has an appearance in a film coming out. But he was a child actor in the late 40s to late 50s. And one role that pops out in particular was with George Reeves in Adventures of Superman. And that's going to be really nice, talking about what many consider the golden age of Hollywood, way before my time, but have definitely seen some of those kind of films. And I think, especially with some of the sci-fi films he has been in that have such big cult followings now, I think it's kind of the cheesiness that you remember, since especially these days it seems like productions can have the huge budgets, and especially with special effects the way they are with computers, you can sometimes lose some of the cheesiness for reality. So it'll be nice talking to Greg. September 17th, we welcome three-time NWA TNA World Tag Team Champion, as seen in the WWE, the natural Chase Stevens. And September 19th, we welcome actor and filmmaker Wyatt Wien. He's going to be appearing at 2019's Dark History and Horror Con. He is best known as Devorah Predator in Predator 2. And, of course, the 2019 Dark History and Horror Con happening October 26th to 27th at the City Center in Champaign, Illinois. You can visit dhhcon.com for more info and up-to-date ticket prices and guest lists. We have some really awesome people coming this year, so be sure to join us. And, of course, SilCon is already in the works for next year. So she's already put that out there. That's official. We will be back next year at the Cross County Mall in Mattoon, Illinois. So stay up to date with us and at SilCon.com for more info as the year progresses and on to next year about who will be at that one as well. So always something fun for you guys to look forward to. Big thanks again to Peter Elbling for joining us. I still feel like goofball for messing up the names live and even some other things before that, one other thing before that with the flyer, but he was really gracious to join us, and he's had a very legendary career. If you guys joined us late, as always, you can check this out in the archive. It should be up probably about 10 minutes after the show uploads. And in about a week or so, hopefully, it should be, about a week or so, all the shows should be on JIAPodcasting.com. I believe, well, let's see here. I even messed up my own website. JIANetwork.com, I guess that'd be our own website, not just mine, because Josh and Ariana and I are in this together. And we have a lot of great shows for you. We are getting ready to record our new one, which is going to involve all three of us, called Three Podcasters, and a microphone. And I believe we're going to do our first show probably in about a week or so. So stay tuned for that roundtable discussion and, of course, for all the great guests and shows we have coming up on Cloverleaf as well. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a great night.